Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the dojo, everybody, the Dynamic Dojo with Rashida and Robert. It's February 23rd, 2014, and we are broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington,
and Burbank, California.
And joining me on the helm today is my brother in the martial arts, Ethan Robert. Ethan Bob, how you doing today?
Doing well. You know, I was telling you just before the show, you know, I had a garage sale this weekend, both days, and I hate moving. I haven't had to move in 19 and a half years.
It's tough.
And sold most of everything I had, which was great. And then somebody said, well, I take metal. Can you help me out? I gave them all my workout bar, my weight bench, my dining room table, everything made out of metal he could chop up and sell, I gave it to him. So that took like a big burden off. Job's going real well. You know, I started a new job last week. The drive absolutely sucks, but, you know, I'm working, which is always a good thing. I'm enjoying it. The people are great. They leave you alone as long as you're working, and I'm very visible. Anybody at any time can walk up behind me and see what I'm doing.
Right on.
So it's a good thing. People are great. I don't talk to the owner that much. They put me on a... I'm back in doors, frames, and hardware again. They put me on a five. I think the job ended up being about 750 doors. First thing right out of the gate, they gave me the set of plans that would cause a hernia. But no, the week's going great. Weather's going real well. Things moving along.
Right
on. I got my Starbucks, so I'm good.
Oh, good. I had to rush home because after my wushu class, I had a couple of students that said, oh, my gosh, see before I got to pay. And then we had to figure out, you know, did they pay last month or not? And this, that, and the other. And I'm like, I got to go. but, you know, it's money. I'll take it. But things are going well here, too. Me and the rest of the crew are getting the new studio ready, ready to go.
Oh, good. How's it coming?
It's coming really good. For our listeners out there that don't know, I'll be moving out of a small rent-by-the-hour room and gradually taking a space. It's 3,500 square feet, and it needs a lot of work. We had to build walls we had to build walls for locker rooms. And one of our black belts, Marina, was in charge of the paint. And, you know, she's really done a good job. It looks great. It's a red, black, and silver color scheme inside the new space. And because, you know, she's the one with the paint, because she's got this vision of what it wants to look like, you know, I'm not touching it. I'm not touching paint. I'm not touching nothing. I don't want to piss her off.
Well, you know, it's funny. I know, you know, you're moving out of a place that you rent by the hour. I know a lot of those places that you rent by the hour, but it's probably not the same thing.
I didn't think about that. I'm like, what are you talking about? What? I was on a completely different subject there. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, you know, cultural arts centers and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, so it's going really well.
Right.
So the walls are pretty done, pretty much done. We just need to get unnecessary stuff out of there because we moved out the whole storage locker full of stuff, and now we got to, like, put stuff back because we didn't know what we were going to need and blah, blah. But we hope to have a grand opening in public April 1st, but we're going to hopefully have a soft opening to bring current students in there and start having classes while we're working around everybody and stuff like that. Maybe the first week of March. So it'll be cool. So for our listeners out there, our number here is 347-677-0699. Now, after this first segment, which I've kind of dubbed the Dojo Fun segment, at around 6:30, 6:35 or so, we're going to have former amateur boxing star Ron Essett joining us. So please stay tuned. And if you have any questions about boxing or getting into boxing, training in boxing, feel free to call in a little bit later, 347-677-0699. But let's go ahead and move on and get some shout-outs out there. So who do you have for birthdays today?
Well, I have my dear friend, which I talked to yesterday, a good friend of the show and a good friend of ours, has had us up I was going up there every 3 months for a while, and we had the USCMAS event up there. Master Craig Carter, his birthday is on March 1st, next Saturday.
Right on. Happy birthday, Master Carter. And I want to send a shout-out out there to my longtime student. He's been around for, oh gosh, I don't know how long. He's been around for a long time. And this shout-out goes to Randall Collins, and his birthday is the 26th of February, that this Wednesday. And for everyone out there that's having a birthday this week, this tune's for you. I love it. So happy birthday, everyone, for the week of February 23rd through September 2nd. So, well, with that said, let's go ahead and move on to shout-out. Now, as we always do for upcoming important events, who Bob and I regularly announce notifications about particular events. So Dragonfest is coming up. Are you excited or what, Bob?
I am. I can barely stand it. I am so excited about this. I spoke to Eric Lee today. Mm-hmm. I should have got. I meant to go to the museum last night. I just couldn't break away. They had Archie Wong night last night at the museum, mm-hmm. at the Martial Arts History Museum. They are, and I've got to open it up in my browser, of course, on my phone. Right now, they've got like 62 booths.
62? 62. Last I checked, there was like 46.
Right, and they just added a whole other section. They added a special effects section. Masters Hall of Fame just got a booth. They're not on the website yet, but and you told me that the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists, PAMA, had contacted mm-hmm. them about also having a booth.
Yep. I haven't checked to see whether or not on the website, but wow. Is Michael going to, like, open another ballroom with this, or are we all going to try to shove ourselves in a
500-square-foot space? We're just going to try to shove our way in, because
wow.
I don't think the particular ballroom, the ballroom we're going into is the largest that they have at the hotel. And mm-hmm. I don't think there is a dividing wall that will open up any other ballrooms next to it.
Oh, okay. Well, this should be.
And the way it's
going to
lay it out is, it's going to be very interesting with the booths crammed in there and 1,000 people that are spectators. Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's going to be real fun. It's going to be cool.
I'm so stoked. Now, for our listeners out there that aren't familiar with Dragonfest was a yearly convention of sorts. In fact, it was the largest martial arts convention on the West Coast. And I'm really not quite sure how long It was in operation before it went out of operation. And it was originally hosted by Master Gerald Okamura. And Michael Matsuda had recently decided to revive the conference or the convention. Well, I guess it is the same conference convention. It's going to be held on May 18th. Did I say that right? May 18th?
Yeah, it's Sunday, May 18th from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m.
It's going to be cool. So if you're on the West Coast and in the California area, come down to Burbank and check it out. It's going to be at the – I don't have it in front of me.
It's going to be at – that's where I come in. It's going to be
right.
At the Burbank Holiday Inn on Angelino and First Street in downtown Burbank. And I'm just going to name the participants real quick. From the history section, which are going to be the celebrity section, anybody who made a real impact is pretty well known. Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, Richard Norton, Art Camacho, Takabota, Kerry Ogawa Wong, James Hong, Peter Kwong, Bill Riyasaki, Eric Lee, and Rodney Takayama. Then in the author section, they're going to have Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny the Jet Akitas, Peter Cunningham, Simon Ree, Lambert Chung, Sal Kahilwalu, I think, Don Baird, John Crane, Jerome Luz, Hyperactive Monkey Book, Steve Sexton, and Myriad Publications. In the film section, there's going to be Fumio Demura, Shin Koyamada, Donnie Williams, Gorilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Gasca from The Gathering, The Stunt People, CNC Movie Factory. Then we go to the arts and crafts section, which is going to be Paul Wee from The Simpsons, Mel's Props, Artistry of Ed Parker, My Scent Image, Justin Waggle Martial Arts Strategy Game, Paula's Jewelry, 2K Customs, Tradition Shirts. And now, here's the news section, the special effects section. They're going to have movie monsters. It's going to be an amazing section. Now, the way they're going to divide this is all of the sections are going to be around the perimeter of the room. Mm-hmm. And down the middle of the room are going to be the vendors with a curtain that separates them from back to back. It's not going to be like a three-sided curtain. It's going to be one-sided that just separates the two sides of the vendor booths, which in the special effects section, you're going to have Nell Wynn, Eric De La Vega, Christopher Hernandez, Neil Kinnamore, Norman Myers, Calvin Lowe, Amber Shoronsky, Alfred Paredes, Koji Omura, George Gasper, Jason Kreger, Rick Czar, Scotty Fields, Bruce D. Mitchell, Jason Andrew Hike. And in the martial arts vendors section, you'll have Sidekick Publications, Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio, Valley Martial Arts Supplies, Kill Combat Instruments, Show V's, Worldwide Martial Arts Council, United Martial Arts for Christ, Filipino Arts with Felix Rolas, and, of course, in that section that's not listed, you will have the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists, and you'll have the Masters Hall of Fame. Oh, try to say that without breathing. It's going to be huge. He's already sold probably about 75 tickets. He expects to sell 500 online and another 500 at the door. It's going to be best, so everybody listening, to buy your tickets online because you will get preferential entrance into the event. There will be, I guess, two doors, one for those buying the tickets there and one for those that are bought them in advance. The cutoff date is going to be May 17th because he will have to email you the tickets. So don't try to buy them online on May 18th because you won't get them.
Okie dokie. Right on. So May 18th, Dragon Fest. The revival of Dragon Fest. It's going to be great.
And Sifu Rusty and I talked about it. We are, as long as we have Wi-Fi, we will be trying to broadcast live if we can last long enough where we don't get any interference from background noise.
Yeah, yeah, I think it'll be great. You know, we hope to get some of the vendors and some of the celebrities to talk with us even for a minute to just kind of play-by-play as to what's going on and how the day's going. So it'll be great. All right. Well, I've got a shout-out also. I'm, as well as Dragon Fest, being excited about Dragon Fest, I'm excited at going to the annual conference for the Association of Women's Martial Arts Instructors. That's going to be this weekend, actually. So I'm going to be out of town. And I think we decided on playing a retro show instead of broadcasting, right?
We did because I don't know what that weekend's going to come. If I find a place, I'm going to have to be moving that weekend.
Right, exactly. So retro show next weekend, everyone. So, yeah, I'm going to be going over there. I'm going to be teaching classes. And this particular organization is somewhat like PAMA, the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists, with the difference in that this association, AME, is only for teachers, whereas PAMA is open to anyone, student or teacher, masters, what have you. Okay, and they have a conference every year that allows teachers to learn new things to bring back to their own classes and what have you. So all sorts of great classes. So I'm just going to run through a few of these. So we've got instructor Marianne Franks, who is a Krav Maga teacher. She's going to be teaching the laws of self-defense. So this is one that's not to be missed. Master Kim Geary is going to be teaching a class called, quote unquote, how to teach two-person drills and then what. Kwang Nu master Terry Giamartino is going to be teaching a class called Teaching Core Values Through Skills. And Sifu Kim Ivy, a Chen Tai Chi teacher here also in Seattle, is going to be teaching a class called Tai Chi Chuan Flow. Sifu Michelle McDaden, a Kaju Kembo instructor here in Seattle, is going to be teaching a couple of classes. She's going to be teaching Designing a Teacher Training Program and Skill Building Warm-Ups for Adults. And especially if you're like a new teacher or an assistant teacher, you know, I suggest that you check this class out, Designing a Teacher Training Program. Sifu Jen Resnick, Kaju Kembo Black Belt, is going to be teaching Qigong, and Qigong in plain English. So no, you know, other real terminology and stuff like that. She's just going to bring together her perspective, modern understanding of alignment and being able to align your fascia and stuff like that, as well as traditional concepts. She's going to bring those together. So pretty cool class. Athena Nancy Rothenberg is going to be teaching a class called The Yin and Yang of Breath and Movement, Enliven Your Kata. Master Lisa Santi is going to be teaching a class called Young Martial Artist Leaders, and it's more of a martial arts program that she gives information on, and the program is meant to build leadership skills with children. So great class. And there's going to be another cool class called Agility Ladder Training. So, you know, if you really want to get your footwork going and get a good workout, you know, you pull out the agility ladder. So I'm going to be taking that one. I'm going to be taking that class. Sensei Jay Spiro is going to be holding the morning meditation sessions and a class called Do You Still Spar? And last but not least, Master Jamie Zimron, an Aikido instructor, is going to teach two classes, Martial Arts and the Business World, and Body-Mind Mastery Technology for Performance. So all of these women are world-class instructors. And it's funny because it's like, you know, when I went through these names, I'm like, wow, I've heard of this person. But in the mainstream martial arts world, nobody knows about these people. And, you know, these women are like the jewels are like jewels in the martial art community. I mean, you don't hear about them, but these people are out there in the community, and they're, you know, just really giving back to the community. And that's why I really like this organization, because it celebrates the participation of women in the martial arts. So it'll be really cool. Oh, and I'm going to be teaching Ubud, different concepts to apply to different arts. Ubud Labid for every art, sensitivity, and flow concepts. So I'll be teaching that, and it'll be a fun weekend, and that's going to be this weekend. It'll be great.
Oh, that is so cool. It sounds like the West Coast is going to be represented really well. Now,
yeah.
Tell me the definition of Ubud Labid as you got it from Dosei Parris.
Well, in
I want to see if they're the same.
Well, I'm pretty sure they are, because the thing is that when I learned Ubud Labid, I learned it through Chris Petley, who had an extensive background in Jeet Kune Do, in Osanto Kali, in Osanto Masalindo Silat, as well as studying with Dosei Parris, with Kakoi Kinyete, and he studied with Burton Richardson and Greg Lontiao. So he had a really mixed experience. So when we learned from him, when we learned Ubud, we learned it the way that we learned it in Kajumbo, which was taught to us by several people. It was taught to us by Datu Kelly Ward, and it was taught to us at a seminar that we attended under Guru Dan Osano. We do it, you know, I guess the same way that most Kali people do, you know, parry, check, trap, punch, you know, the three beat. However, Grandmaster Chris Petrilli has also taught a two-beat switch, inside to outside switch, one beat, one hand flow, and like a bajillion different variations. And what I've done with that is I've taken all of those drills and said, well, how can we apply this to Tai Chi? How do we apply this to Karate? How can we make this so that way it's not just for Filipinos anymore, right? You know, because it's a wonderful drill. You know, it's a wonderful drill. You know, just like Chi Sao and push hands and stuff like that, and it's a great drill. So that's how we do it. Now in Dosei Parris, we do it a little bit differently, because when we start sparring, we say that we start from Ubud, but we do more of like a what we call a sticky hand type thing, and we call it sun and moon. So it's not, you don't really see parry, check, trap, punch, you know, as far as separate movements. You see it all done in a circle, in a way, and you feel from there. So it, from that standpoint, in Kakoi, it feels more like push hands with a stick, and then you start banging on each other. So I'm going to be teaching
this. I thought it was really cool, though, Rusty, when you and I touched hands, how we went from pushing hands to Ubud to Lop Sao to double Chi Sao to I don't think we did single, but it was a really cool drill because we were just flowing.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the beauty of any flow drill, I think, because you know, I teach a couple of students that are in my regular Kung Fu and Kali Eskrima classes, and we were doing push hands, and I'm like, you know, if you guys really think about it, we are doing Ubud. It's on a different plane, and we're still doing the same stuff based on our lines and where our waist turns and stuff like that. We're just doing the same thing. It's just that the flavor is different. That's it. You know, now hit her. You know?
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, Burt Richardson says, when all fails, hit.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be teaching Ubud for that. It'll be fun. I also want to place one more announcement about PAMA. I just want to remind any women martial artists out there that might be listening that the Pacific Association of Women's Martial Artists will be holding its yearly training camp, and it's going to be held in Turner, Oregon. At a place called Aldersgate Retreat, a beautiful place in Turner, Oregon, absolutely beautiful, right in the middle of town, and you know, you just kind of forget that you're in the middle of a town. It's open to any female martial artist. You don't have to be a member of PAMA, although it would be a good idea that you joined PAMA because it's cheaper to go to camp if you're a member of PAMA, but you don't have to be. And there were even having a one-day rate as well as the whole weekend rates. So, you know, if you don't want to, like, go to the whole camp or whatever, you pay your, like, $100 or $150 or something. I forget what it is. And you get to attend any classes that you want that whole day. Really great. But what we still need, though, is we still need people to apply for teacher trainer positions. So we'll be taking applications until March 31st. And if you are interested, even though it's your first time, we would love to see you apply. You want to email your application, and the application information on how to apply is at PAWMA.org, so PAWMA.org/instructor application. You'll be able to find it when you go to the website at PAWMA.org. You just email your application materials to teacherselection@PAWMA.org. And I'm one of the people in charge of that, so I'll be responding when I get your applications to make sure that you know we got it. But then, you know, we got to go through the vetting process and the voting and blah 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 blah. But lots of great instructors, and I think any woman martial artist out there should come and check it out. All right, that's it for my that's it for me. I think, oh, here we go. I'm looking at my notes now. I just want to do one more shout out. I just want to mention the other show on our network, Dynamic Dojo. Is not the only one. And I just want to make sure our listeners out there do take the time and check out one of those shows. So on Mondays at 7 p.m., right here on the same network, we've got the Legacy Forum. And that's hosted by Harry and Robin Shirey. And it provides a lot of great information that assists people in living a balanced life. So it's great. I listen to it every now and again, and the show presents a great approach to living that helps anyone create a quote-unquote inspirational legacy. The program topics feature nutrition, network marketing, yoga, self-development, informational tidbits, guest interviews, the whole nine yards. In fact, I call it the Swiss Army knife of radio shows. A lot of great information in one show, so do check it out. On Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, we've got Violet Reiki Radio with Rose Jimenez. And the show involves anything and everything about the spiritual practice of Reiki. So, and Rose is really fun on the air. And she's got really great guests on the air. So if you're interested in Reiki or you already practice Reiki, go check out that show Thursdays at 6. And one of our other shows, April Vidal's Bucket List, that used to be airing on Fridays at 10 a.m. It's on hiatus for the time being, but we'll be sure to let everyone know when April returns on the air. So we're looking forward to that. And that's a really fun show that talks about stuff that listeners want to do before they pass away. So really, really cool stuff. All right. I think that's
it. Well, what about our other shows, though? Because we have two other shows coming up. One that's going to be seasonal, and hopefully the other one's going to be starting soon as well.
Yeah. Well,
I'm excited.
Yeah, we still need to firm up some stuff and get some more training going on, but we've got Adria Nelsioni and Sifu Aldacascos himself of Kajikembo One Hop Kendo that will be hosting a show. And I'll be training another person on the switchboard here I'm not quite sure what she wants to call the show, but Kimberly Knaus is going to be holding a motivational. I'm going to call it a show that has to deal with motivational subjects. So it'll be really fun, and she's got a really great on-air personality. And the voice for radio. In fact, you know, I've known her for quite a while, and I've kept telling her that she's got the voice for radio. So,
well, that's cool. She's got the voice for radio. I've got the face for radio.
Oh, so those are
and
the other.
And what about the other one? What about the other one?
Let me go through all my stuff because I think I got them. Hold on, I got Legacy. I didn't mention us, but because we're already on the air. But I've got Legacy Forum, Violet Reiki Radio, April Vidal's, and then who else?
Well, I'm really excited because soon we are going to start syndicating Kicking It Old School with Dan Hecht. That's going to start in like April or May.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I thought about that. Someone mentioned iTunes a couple of days ago on another podcast that I was listening to on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm like, when is that going to happen? When am I going to have to download? Yes. So, and the thing is that with Hanshi Dan's show, I don't know if we figured out a day to air that.
Well, I think we talked about Tuesday because that was about the only day we had left.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to have to talk with, I don't know how I'm going to do this because Kimberly Knaus is probably looking at Tuesdays or Wednesdays.
Well, whatever day she chooses, we'll just put him on the other day.
Yeah, we'll have to.
And Wednesday will be better because his show doesn't go to podcast for 3 days after it airs, and his show's on Saturday. So let's go Wednesday.
That works. All right. Well, then that works. Very cool. Awesome. All right. Well, I think that's it for all of the shout-outs. Let's go right into the health news. All right. So I'm going to do what I did last week. So not so much news today. Rather, some more health facts. And, you know, I love going through these kind of tidbits because, you know, I sometimes just kind of read through health or body trivia and I just kind of go, oh, that's interesting. But, you know, it's always cool to be reminded about these amazing facts about our body. So, did you know that the small intestine is about 4 times as long as the average adult is tall? And if it wasn't looped back and forth upon itself, its length of between 18 to 23 feet wouldn't even fit to our gut. So,
wow.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
That's nuts.
That is. I'm like, my gosh. All right. Here's another bit. Do you know that every square inch on the human body has about 32 million bacteria on it? Now, before y'all start jumping in your showers and start scrubbing with the scrub brush or anything like that, you'll be pleased to know that the vast majority of these bacteria are harmless. All right. Now, when you sneeze, and a lot of people know this already, but I got to read it just because I think it's cool. When you sneeze, that air can travel out of your mouth at speeds of over 100 miles per hour. And so make sure you could, that's another reason why you got to cover your nose and cover your mouth, because it doesn't matter that you're, you know, standing across the room from someone that sneezes. It comes out at 100 miles an hour. Now, last week I had mentioned length of our blood vessels if they were laid end to end. And if I remember correctly, it was 60,000 miles of blood vessels. Well, your heart has to pump, well, it ends up pumping about 2,000 gallons of blood through those same vessels every day. Every day. 2,000 gallons. Now, if you think about that, you have to think to yourself, where the hell does that blood come from and where does it go? Isn't that wild? 2,000 gallons of blood every day. All right. And a couple more. If you, kind of gross, if you saved it all up, an average person produces about 25,000 quarts of saliva. That's enough to fill a swimming pool. Two of them, as a matter of fact. Ew. snore loudness. So, do you snore, Bob?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, it says here that by 60 years of age, about 60% of men and about 40% of women will snore. Okay? Now, most snores average around 60 decibels, and that's the noise level of normal speech. However, some snorers can snore at a noise level of more than 80 decibels, and 80 decibels is as loud as the sound of a pneumatic drill breaking up concrete, and noises over 85 decibels are hazardous and can injure the human ear. 80
wow.
decibels? That's crazy. Oh, my, pneumatic drill. Can you imagine sleeping next to someone that sounds like a pneumatic drill? I'd be like, get out.
Well, I know my wife has actually had to go sleep on the couch.
Oh, man. That's wild. Gosh. Well, that was it for my health trivia of the day. So let's move on to...
Weird News.
What do we got?
Well, I wanted to tell you because we're running a little over. I did email our guest, and he knows we're running a little over.
Okay.
This is one of those stories tonight that only in California is this going to happen.
Hmm.
This woman, Blondie Bennett. She is obsessed with Barbie.
What? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, this is amazing.
Okay.
She uses hypnotherapy. Get this. She uses hypnotherapy to make herself brainless.
You see, they are insane.
Okay. I can't wait to hear this.
A California woman who describes herself as Barbie obsessed says she uses hypnotherapy sessions in the hopes that it will decrease her IQ. I'm sorry.
Oh,
if she goes through this, her IQ is pretty well in the single digits as far as I'm
concerned.
Oh,
my gosh. Oh, no. Okay.
It says, she states that I just want to be the ultimate Barbie. I actually want to be brainless. Blondie Bennett. 38 years. I thought she'd be a lot younger than that. She's 38 years old. She told that to Barcroft TV. I don't like being human, if that makes sense. Natural is boring. I would love to be, like, completely plastic. Well, I can see where this one's
been. God, somebody just put her back in the box.
Bennett has had... breast augmentation and other procedures in the hopes of attaining her goal. But now she says she's undergoing hypnotherapy sessions 2 to 3 times a week in order to dumb down her thoughts. She says it's working. Duh. I've had 20 sessions, and I'm already starting to feel dizzy and confused all the time. And it's called the Daily Mail. Wow. She told Barcroft TV that although she loves her looks, her plastic features tend to turn off a lot of people, she said, that her friends and family don't approve of her lifestyle. Bennett appears to maintain an NSFW Twitter account advertising live cam shows. Her handle, not surprisingly, is Busty Doll.
Oh, God.
It makes me want to look her up on Twitter.
I just did.
Did you really?
I Googled Blondie Bennett. and hit images. Oh my goodness. This lady is absolutely crazy. Now, these images, I'll be frank, do not have your kids around when you pull up the images, because this lady's boobs are too unnatural. This is not healthy. This is not healthy. This almost like angers me. This is not healthy. I mean, her lips look like big old, you know, pontoons. They've got so much junk injected into them. Her skin looks plastic. She's rail thin and has these boobs bigger than Dolly Parton's. It's just disturbing, disturbingly disgusting. And, you know, when she gets older, she's just going to have to deal with it. She's not going to be able to walk. I'm surprised her back doesn't hurt now. Jeez, people. Why? 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 Oh, gosh. Why? I don't understand.
I don't know either. You know, oh, my God. Oh, never mind.
You saw them, didn't you? You just saw
I just Googled
them.
It.
I told you. I mean, look at that. Is not natural. Now all the listeners out there are looking it up.
Yeah, they're like opened another tab on their Google, on their Chrome and
I know, right? Well, we've got Devin's our usual listener on the board. I wonder if she's looking it up. Oh gosh, it's just crazy.
Oh, I bet she
all
is.
Right.
Now we're going to move on to now that we had some fun with that one. You remember, JoJo Fun is our segment.
That's
these
right.
These weird laws come from the state of Nevada. It is illegal. This must be a really old one. It is illegal to drive a camel on the highway. Yeah, I know. You know, after reading that story and seeing those pictures, the camel's hump just brought together a whole new image for me.
It did. I was just like, wow, what timing, bro.
I know.
Oh, God.
It's still legal to hang someone for shooting your dog on your property.
That's got to be an old one, too.
That's got to be from the 1800s. Now, these are city laws in Nevada. Well, the first one's from Clark County, which is where Vegas is. An ordinance makes bringing a concealable firearm into the county illegal unless it is registered with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. Makes sense. Hmm. In Elko, everyone walking on the street is required to wear a mask. That must be one ugly town.
Well, you know, when I was in Japan and China, they tend to do that a lot too, like when they're sick. So,
I've seen. You know, it's funny that you said that. Every person here that wears a surgical mask when they're out,
mm-hmm.
and don't think this is being racial or anything, I look at them and they happen to be Asian. And maybe
mm-hmm.
it's a cultural thing. When you're sick, you try to protect everybody else. Or you try to keep it from being sicker. In Nyla, a man is forbidden from buying drinks for more than three people other than himself at any period during the day.
Unfair!
It is. If you want to buy me a drink, I'm not going to stop you.
Right.
In Reno, it is illegal to lie down on the sidewalk. Benches may not be placed in the middle of any street. And sex toys are not allowed. Or, I'm sorry, well, the same thing, but they are outlawed.
Aww.
I thought that's where they were invented.
Boo. Oh, my goodness. You know, these laws, I love these weird laws because it just goes to show that any community out there is just friggin' crazy.
They are insane.
They are insane. Yeah, that was that was pretty good, actually. That was pretty good. Let's play that again.
You see, they are insane.
We're just all insane. All right. Was that it for Loss?
That was it.
Wow, okay. Well, we are running a little bit over time, but hang on there, guests. After a short 3.5-minute break, we will have our guest, amateur boxer Ron Essett, joining us, and he'll talk to us about his career, training, and all that good stuff. But we'll be right back after this.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
This is Annie Lennox of Eurythmics, or RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive if someone else has been drinking. Thank you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one
likes me. Biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The
only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Eddie Morales from Kickin' It Old School on KCAA 1050 AM. I want to take this opportunity to invite you to the martial arts event of the year, the Masters Hall of Fame, on Saturday, June 22, 2013, at the Orange County Hilton, located in Costa Mesa, California. This year's theme is Women in the Martial Arts. Our guest speaker will be Lisa the Black Widow King. We will be honoring many legends in the martial arts. Join Dan and I from Kickin' It Old School at the Masters Hall of Fame, Saturday, June 22nd, 2013. Get your tickets now at mastershalloffame.org.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And darn it, Bob, I pulled up the wrong commercial spot.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that or just blow that one out. Wow, really?
Gosh. No,
a couple corrections. This year, the Masters is going to be on Friday instead of a Saturday. It's going to be August 1st, and we are looking for induction. And so if anybody out there knows anybody that has the experience to be inducted into a Hall of Fame, please contact one of us on Facebook.
Yes, please do. Please do. Me and Sifu Bob are ambassadors and, for the organization, and we'll be in charge of making sure that we research all of your suggestions and stuff like that. And so please do. You know, our goal is to recognize excellence in the martial arts. And they don't have to be celebrities. You know, they could be that cool teacher teaches out of his or her garage down the street, but makes a difference with the children. Those are the people that we want to bring into the organization. So, yes. All right. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Sifu Bob, who will introduce our guest for the evening.
Yeah. Ronnie and I are friends on Facebook, and we have these poking wars all the time. I read a little bit of his Facebook page and thought, wow, this would be really cool to have somebody that actually lives in L.A. actually on our show. So would you please help me welcome retired former amateur champion, boxing champion, Ronnie Essett to the show.
Woohoo! Thanks for joining us. Mr. S, how are you today?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you guys for inviting me, and I'm looking forward to talking about a little boxing.
Awesome, and I'm sure
Very
our listeners
cool.
are too. So listeners out there, don't forget our phone number, 347-677-0699, and our chat board on the Blog Talk Radio show marquee. If you have any questions, go ahead and write them on the chat board. I just checked the chat board, and Deb Evans is just going off about Blondie Burnett or whatever her name is. So, Bob, Deb is just going off on the Barbie chick. But,
oh, right. No.
I know. Oh, my goodness. So, Ronnie, I'm sure all of our listeners want to know, because this is the same question that we ask all of our martial arts guests. What got you interested in boxing, and can you tell us a little bit about your early training?
Well, what got me interested was the 1976 Olympics, watching those guys go over there and win 5 gold medals, Sugar Ray Leonard, Howard
mm-hmm.
Davis, the Sphinx Brothers, and John Tate. So, you know, once I seen that, I saw the individual aspect of boxing. And, you know, I was a little loner kid, so it kind of appealed to me to be able to go in there and do something all by myself.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool.
Who was your
first coach?
A guy named was Elder David Howard. I joined at the Willis and Boys Club, had a little boxing program. And so I started in that boxing program at the Willis Boys and Girls Club. So once I started boxing, I just fell in love with the sport. I think it's probably the purest sport of all of them. It's man
mm-hmm.
against man. Most of the time, you're the same weight class. So it just matters who has the better skills and who worked a little harder.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So after that, you know, I went over to another club, a Riverside. You know, then I started winning the Indiana State Golden Gloves. I won that 4 times. And then I won a national title a couple times. And I was an alternate on the 84 Olympic team, which is arguably the best Olympic team of all time. So, you know, I had a sparkling amateur career, so I had a really good time in boxing. You know, I just love it.
Very cool.
Now, Ronnie, I was reading that you lost the fight that would have put you actually on the Olympic team. Is that true?
Yes, I fought Frank Tate in the final box off, as well as the finals of the Olympic trials. You know, I was one fight away. If I could have beat Frank Tate, I would have been a member, an actual participating member. So we had alternates, so I lost the fight, but I still got to come to L.A. In case Frank Tate, something happened to him, you know, then I will be able to compete. You know, so, you know, I did have got very close, you know what I mean, to make an Olympic team. And as far as boxing is concerned, that was my greatest loss, not making the Olympic team. It hurt me more than not winning the world title, not making that Olympic team.
Wow.
But you were right there. You were on the cusp of getting on the Olympic team. That's an accomplishment itself, just
yes.
to get that far.
Yeah, I mean, it was, took a lot of hard work, you know what I mean? So I'm glad I made it, and I decided to dedicate myself to boxing at an early age, because this is really the sport that I love.
Oh,
that's very,
very
cool.
Now, Ronnie, a lot of boxers or kickboxers will fight in multiple weight classes. Did you ever fight out of your normal – and for one thing, what is your normal weight class, and did you ever fight outside of that class?
Well, I fought 160 and 168. I fought middleweight and super middleweight. I won the North American Boxing Federation Championship at middleweight, the 160-pound class. And what happened in my career is the first available title shot for middleweight class. So that's why we moved up to super middleweight. So I think I could have made the 160 pretty easily, but we decided to move up for the opportunities to fight for the world title. So that's my story.
Now, Ronnie, I'm curious about gaining the weight and keeping it nutritional at the same time. It's to gain weight, you're not going to go out to your local Tommy's and just chow down on chili burgers. How do you gain the weight to go up a class?
That's what I've always wanted to know.
Well, this was one of those situations where I walked around at 175 or whatever, and then I would drop down to 160. So it's probably a lot easier for me to fight at the super middleweight class, the 168 class. I could have made 160, but it was a more comfortable position at 168 for me.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't gaining the weight, it was losing the weight to go down a class.
Yes, sir. That was the 160-pound limitation was really taxing my body. It was a tougher weight class for me to make. The 160 class, but the opportunity came at 168. That's why we decided to just remain at 168.
Oh, very cool. Now, we'll go back a little bit. Now, I know you're a trainer, and how would you, because I'm really curious about this, you know, losing weight is one thing, but how would you bring a fighter up? How would a fighter gain weight? Let's say he was at the 160 but wanted to fight at the 168. How would he gain the weight?
Well, I think probably the number one step for anybody who gets to this particular level in boxing to get to the, you know, fighting for the title, you would just have to simply go hire a nutritionist or somebody with that professional expertise to help you do that. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't have that type of knowledge, so that's what my step would be, to send them to a nutritionist.
Oh, got it. Perfect. Okay, I understand. Sure.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, speaking of bringing up fighters, this question is more so for people that have wanted to get into boxing that are listening. So let's say someone comes to your training sessions or wants to get into boxing with you, what would they expect? What would be the first thing that they would expect? Like, you know, because, well, you know, I'm just like with martial arts, there's going to be like teenagers out there that, you know, will expect to put on the gloves and start like wailing it out in the ring, and that's probably not the first thing they're going to learn, correct?
Well, the first thing that we teach here at the Boxing District 1190 South Librarian in Los Angeles is your stance. You got to have the proper stance. You got to know how to distribute your weight evenly, how to, you know, have that firm stance where people can't push you around. So the first thing that I work on with people is their stance, and then the basics of boxing, which is the jab, the right hand, and the left hook. So those are, you know, I consider myself not a trainer. I consider myself a teacher. I'm a boxing teacher. I try to teach the fundamentals of boxing, defense and offense. So my whole goal is to make them a complete fighter, solid fundamentally. That's my most important thing, is trying to teach fundamentals.
Awesome.
Very
that
cool.
is so important.
It is.
Yeah,
it goes back, you know, as we're martial artists, we're all martial artists, whether it's boxing or kickboxing or whatever, it always goes back to the basics, no matter what.
Well, I think the prime example of that is Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins is winning these fights with nothing but basic boxing skills. That's the one admiration I have for Bernard Hopkins, that he wins his fights with very basic boxing skills, things that you should have learned when you first started boxing. That's what he's dominating these guys with. So that's the biggest compliment I can give Bernard Hopkins. He's sticking to the basics. He went all the way back to the basics, and he's dominating it at the age of 49, which shows you how
long it's
going to take you.
Wow, that's awesome. And, you know, I find that interesting. It is amazing. I find that interesting that basics are overcoming a lot of the other guys. What would you feel these other guys that are losing to him, what would you feel that they're not doing? Well, I mean, I guess it's obvious that they're not sticking to the basics, but do you find that they're trying to be too fancy in the ring? Because I don't watch boxing all that often.
Here's the problems with today's boxing and as far as the whole society we're dealing with. We're about flash instead of substance. You know, so they see Floyd Mayweather. Floyd has the flash, but Floyd also is the Einstein of boxing. Nobody has ever done it to this level of expertise that Floyd does. So a lot of people are looking for that flash, and they're neglecting the basics, trainers as well as the fighters. Most trainers want to have this flash. That's what seems to make the money for the guys. So, therefore, they're neglecting the basics for the flash.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's too bad.
That speaks volumes. That really does speak volumes, though.
It is. It does. I mean, that's too bad. And, you know, we see this in martial arts as well. You know, I teach wushu, which is considered by many people to be all flash. But in order to make the flash look good, you have to know your basics. And too many people come in and they want to get right down to all the flips and the jumps and stuff like that. And then they get bored when we start working the basics, and then they leave and try to go find someone that'll teach them tricks, and then, you know, they go off and do breakdancing or, you know, something or parkour, and that's just too bad. And
the biggest issue of where you see the flash is the guys hitting the pads nowadays. Sometimes it boggles my mind when these guys hit the pad. I feel like, what kind of punches is that? They throwing 3-inch punches. Maybe I could throw 100 3-inch punches in a minute, but they're not throwing me any good. So therefore, people are liking that flash, and flash is ruling boxing.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Oh, that reminds me, Ronnie, speaking of, you know, the fancy, you know, stuff that modern boxers are doing today, because I remember, like, a couple years ago, we had a speed bag installed in my studio, and it was just there, you know, but, you know, it was just hanging out. We had no idea what to do with it. It was just kind of hanging out, right? It was sitting on the, just kind of sitting in the corner, and people, like, going, what is this for? You know, and it's kind of like timing, rhythm. But I, you know, to tell you the truth, I really couldn't answer that question. So, for any students that are listening, can you explain to any beginners out there what a speed bag is, and, you know, what its use in boxing drills are?
Well, the speed bag is basically usually a little bag that you're trying to get a rhythm, but if you go, there's a 1-2-3 count. I've taught 90-year-old ladies how to hit the speed bag. It's very simple.
Awesome.
All you got to do is get the count. It's a count. So, but basically, it's a good eye-hand coordination type thing. You know, it's about timing. Boxing is a game of timing. You know, it's about timing. So that's what you're working on, different timing. You know, boxing is quickness, so you got to be able to, you know, like I tell people, what really taught me how to box is when I was younger, in my youth, we used to slap box.
Mm-hmm.
It was about speed, so that's what the speed bag does, help you with your speed.
Awesome. Hear that, students? Finally, rhythm, speed. All right.
Are you guys from the slot box here?
What was that?
I said, are any of you guys from the slot box here? Where we used
the
to slap box.
Oh man, we used to just slap spar. I don't know if it was the same thing, you know. So rather than putting on the foam dip pads and the headgear, we were just like, okay, let's go. You wearing a cup? Okay, slap. I couldn't think. Put your freaking hands up, man. What are you doing?
Rusty, you're concerned if somebody's wearing a cup?
What's that?
If they're not wearing a cup, that's their problem.
That's true. I just don't want to have to feel it.
Ah, that's true too. Yeah.
That's true. Don't want to feel nothing jangle around.
Oh, thanks for that visual. You're always a big help. So Ronnie, who was your big? Growing up in boxing, who was your biggest influence?
It would have to be Ali. You know, Ali, to me, his story is much larger than boxing, you know. So, you know, when I was coming up, Ali was the one that really inspired me. You know, he inspired so many people, not just inside the ring, but outside the ring. So Ali was number one in my mind.
Very cool. I'm sure a lot of boxers feel the same way growing up.
Yeah. Now, speaking of boxers, go ahead. Sorry, Ronnie.
Yeah, no problem. Another one of my favorite boxers was Wilfredo Benitez. He won the title at age 17. You know, he won, be the legitimate champion at age 17 to be the youngest world champion. So, and he was so good defensively, and that's what I want to always have in my repertoire, you know, a good defense. So he was the one that inspired me as well as Ali. Ali number one, Wilfred Benitez number two on my list.
Awesome.
Right on.
Very cool.
Right on. I'm curious. I'm like trying to find, like, I had notes written down. I don't know what I did with it. I'm curious about what you would consider your most memorable fight.
My most memorable fight, I think, was against Robbie Sims on USA Network. I was living in Florida at the time, and the fight was in Tampa. Just had all the elements of a good high level fight. You know, it was back and forth. So, you know, and plus it was on a televised event, so it was really, really one of my more exciting fights, if not the best. Fight that I think I fought as a professional.
Very cool. Very cool. And you know what? Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, no, I was just going to go to the next question. Go ahead,
Oh,
Bob.
Okay. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, what's funny is that, you know, that sometimes, you know, the fights or the competitions or what have you, you know, be it you're a boxer or a martial artist or what have you, the ones that you feel that weren't your best or what have you, always seems to be the ones that are the most memorable. Isn't that weird how that works? Has that ever happened to you
mm-hmm.
too, Bob?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. You always seem to like remember those, and I think it's not funny, haha, but I think it's great. You know, a lot of people would think that, oh yeah, that big fight that you had with so and so, and that was like just a killer knockout, man. And you're like, well, you know, but it wasn't my most memorable. It's interesting how that works.
Yeah, I've had some great fights. I won my first big national title as an amateur. I won in my hometown of Indianapolis, Indiana. That was the National Amateur Boxing Federation Championships. So I was able to win my national title in my hometown. So that was a big event. You know, that was really big.
Oh, I bet it was.
So.
Right on.
Very
cool.
Now, Ronnie, let's talk about strategy. Let's say you enter the ring with a fighter that you aren't real familiar with. Is there a thought process that you go through about the strategy you're going to use when you enter the ring?
Well, the one thing about me is that I was a counterpuncher. I was a counterpuncher. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't so aggressive. So usually my offense was directed off of what they came at me with. So I was never the one to be the first aggressive. I was always the one to try to counterpunch, try to outthink my opponent. That was my style of fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good. Now is that what you do as a teacher to your boxing? To your students?
Yeah, that you know, most of my clients do not have any desire to box. So I just teach them the basics of the game. So, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of defense. So that's the most important thing.
Very cool. Now, you had a very wonderful career. Why did you choose to retire when you did?
It was very simple in my particular mind. When I didn't want to get up and run, you know, when I didn't want to get up out that bed and run every day, I said, Ron, this is time to do something else. Because this is a very dangerous sport, very dangerous. Mm. So, and most injuries happen to guys when they're fatigued. You know, very few guys that get hurt when they get knocked out the first round or whatever. Think about it. Most guys, where they get injured are in the later rounds, are usually when they're fatigued. So I didn't want to take that chance.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the injuries that pro boxers or any boxer, what are some of the injuries that boxers can sustain?
Well, you know, the most prominent one for people to have a familiarity with is pugilistic dementia. Call it what they consider punch drunk. Usually that's the loss of memory and not being able to function on a high mental level. So that's what seems to be a lot of things. It may not show up for 20 years, but, you know, because it's unnatural to get hit in the head. I mean, you'd be kidding yourself if you said otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow. I had no idea that. Wow, that's wild.
But all of us that got involved in this sport knew the risk that we were taking. And like I tell everybody, thank God I'm cognizant. I feel like I'm well spoken. I have my faculties still here. But who knows in 5 years? Hopefully not, but who knows?
Well, we're pulling for you. We're pulling for you. We hope that everything's all good to like 90.
Exactly. Go ahead. Now, Ronnie, you said you're coaching. A lot of your clients don't want to go into the ring. Are you also coaching those that do?
No, sir. Most of my clients are just here for the fitness aspect of it, and they like the boxing gym. They like to see, boxing to me is like it's an art form, and that's what I'm trying to have my clientele appreciate, the art form of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to teach them, to appreciate it. You know, a lot of people also think boxing is just a violent sport. But I've always seen the beauty in boxing, and that's what I'm trying to bring my clients. That's what I'm trying to teach my clients, the beauty of the whole sport.
Oh, very
awesome.
Good. Now, do you put them in the ring to spar, or is it strictly the art form, the physicality, the physical fitness of it that you train them for?
Well, I have a couple of clients that like to get in the ring and box with me. I still spar. Matter of fact, I sparred 6 rounds a couple of days ago, so I still spar with my clients. But most of them are just want to learn. I'm just teaching them the art form. But I do have a couple of clients that do still like to spar. And if any of my clients want to spar, I'll take them into a controlled sparring, you know, where they don't have to worry about getting hurt. But I still push them enough to, you know, to appreciate the art of the combat. But I don't try to hurt them. So it works out fine, man. I have a lot of good clients.
Now, I got to ask this one. Have you ever had a client at first that had an ego that controlled sparring to another level with you?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, but like I tell my clients, like I spar with these guys. I'm 51 years old. I just turned 51 a couple of days ago. And I tell
them, happy birthday.
Thank you. I tell these guys, I said, don't be fooled by the old man look with the gray beard and all that stuff. And this guy that just done quit boxing after they sparred with me because they thought it was going to be so easy.
I completely understand that. Well, remember, Rusty, we did announce his birthday on last week's show.
Yeah. I just wanted to say happy birthday since it's past.
Well, thank
now.
You. Appreciate it.
Yeah, happy birthday. Now, speaking of the art form, because, you know, I loved it when you said that, that you want to preserve the art form. But speaking of the art form, what would you consider some of the differences between, like, let's say, turn of the century boxing, or even older than that, you know, like, gosh, what's the name of that old-time boxer, John L. Sullivan? What would you venture this to be some of the differences between turn of the century boxing and today's boxing?
Well, I think it's probably the most important aspect is just the accessibility to things that we have nowadays as opposed to that time. You know, right now they have all these different fad programs. People can go look up online and become certified boxing teachers. You know,
what?
They didn't have that back in the days. You know, people can go online and sign up and they be a boxing teacher, never step to foot in the ring. So I think that's the difference. We don't really have any teachers. We have these trainers, but we don't have teachers. That's what boxing is lacking right now is boxing teachers.
Wow, you can sign up online to be, that's unbelievable. That's ridiculous.
You can do it.
That's ridiculous. And you don't have to go anywhere and, like, go through a clinic or anything? That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to look that up one of these days because it's like I can't believe something like that exists. $1,000, you can be a boxing trainer and, you know, not even have to put on gloves. That doesn't make sense to me. So, I'm sorry, I'm just, like, taken aback. Back to you, Bob. Like,
well, and I'm loving this conversation because he's actually putting it into perspective what the difference is between a trainer and a teacher.
I know, I love it. I absolutely love it. Great. And, you know, I used to have this book called The Police Gazette, and it always had stories of old-time boxing matches back in, like, the, you know, mid-1800s. No pictures, just, like, lithographs. I mean, like, really old-timey, right? And I would read that some of these boxing matches would last, like, all freaking day. 80 rounds, you know,
wow.
Stuff like that. Yeah, you know, and if it was too dark, you know, that they would continue the match the next day. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, how is that possible? And, you know, just out of curiosity, after I asked you that question about the differences between turn of the century and modern boxing, just out of curiosity, I looked up old-time boxing, quote-unquote, on Google. And if there's anything that I've noticed, it's there's a difference in the stance. It seems like the stance on a lot of these old photos is more on the rear leg, and the guard is a little bit different, and stuff like that. So I find it really fascinating about the evolution of boxing from then, or even like earlier than that, till now. It's just amazing what technology brings into the mix. And I still don't believe you can be a trainer online. That's ridiculous. I can't believe it.
Ridiculous, but factual.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but some of these old photos are just incredible. It, you know, just so if anybody's out there listening, you know, look up some of these photos. Look up John L. Sullivan and stuff like that. It's just, wow, this is crazy cool. All right.
Well,
sorry
about
that,
Rusty, because I've seen some of them. And Ronnie, I want you to jump in, you know, where the palm of the hand, even though it's a clinched fist, are facing you instead of at a different angle. And you're right, the weight distribution is more on the rear leg instead of on the toes. They're more flat-footed, more like a Wing Chun stance. Ronnie, have you ever done any of the history behind it to show the art form of the evolution of boxing?
To be honest, I really haven't. You know, thank God that I had great teachers from the very beginning. So the knowledge that I got was from those teachers. So I really didn't look back. You know, I've watched those Sugar Ray Robinson fights, the old Henry Armstrong. I've watched those fights. But in my estimation, I was never able to compare them. I'm not a fan of comparing eras, you know, because there's just so many different little intangibles that you have to take into effect, you know, to accurately do it. So I really don't like to deal with eras at all. I mean, you know, I respect the Jack Johnsons, the Henry Armstrongs, the Ray Robinsons, you know, so... But I really do not try to look back on the era to say they did it this way or that way. I just try to do it the best of the era that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Great answer. And
yeah.
It sounds like you've had some really amazing teachers over the years. And the reason I say that is because of your attitude towards the teaching is maybe a little unique and not something I've ever heard from a boxing standpoint.
Yeah, I really did. I mean, like I tell everybody, you know, I had a trainer out of Tampa, Florida. He trained Antonio Tarver, too. His name is Jimmy Williams. Had a great Ben Getty, you know, rest in peace, another great trainer. So he helped out. So, you know, in the amateurs, Emmanuel Stewart was around. You know, the Customatos, the Kevin Rooney's, all those top-level trainers I had access to, Georgie Biddens, was able to listen, you know, watch them train other guys, but just listen to that knowledge, suck it in. So, you know, I've been fortunate from that point of view of being around a lot of great trainers with a lot of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, amazing.
That is amazing. Very cool. Now, out of curiosity, Ron, have you studied any other types of martial arts outside of boxing, or was boxing your main thing?
Well, you know, as a little kid, I got a yellow belt in Taekwondo.
Awesome. That's awesome.
But I think that was just because I showed up.
That's awesome. Now, out of curiosity, what's your take on the boxing skills of like modern MMA fighters nowadays?
Well, to be quite honest, I mean, I think they're getting a little better. I think they're going to a lot of boxing gyms now to improve mm-hmm. their standards. You know, I can honestly say that I'm not a watcher of MMA. You know, not mm-hmm. that I got anything against it, but it just doesn't interest me like boxing does. So mm-hmm. I can't say that I'm an MMA expert, and I don't try to disclaim it or say that it's bad or this or that. But the fact is, I just don't watch much MMA.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. One of my business partner loves to watch boxing, and I don't get too much of a chance to watch it unless I'm at her house. Because she gets a lot of the pay-per-views and stuff like that, and I just don't, you know, like having to pay-per-view. So, you know, and it's true, though, what you talk about the art, right? I think the last fight that I saw live was when I was in the Philippines, you know, when Manny Pacquiao was fighting. And, you know, just to see the differences in how the art is expressed within the two fighters. It's just amazing to watch. And, you know, there's been, like, times where I just get so caught up in watching the footwork and watching, you know, how they bob weave and how they work the ring, and then all of a sudden something happens, and I go, whoa, what the hell did I miss? You know? Why is he on the floor? What's going on? You know, but it's true. It's an art, and you know, hoping that any kids that are listening, if they want to get into boxing, I hope they – you know, don't carry that stereotype that boxing is, you know, just all about the prize fight and that it's just all about knocking the other guy out. You know, and I love the points that you made about, you know, paying attention to your basics. And I hope the kids out there are listening to that if they ever want to get into boxing. So that's very cool.
Yeah, that's probably the most disappointing aspect of boxing nowadays to me is the fact that they're not really teaching the basics. They're teaching the more the flash, the Adrian Broners. And, you know, and then a guy like Andre Ward gets kind of lost in the midst.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a pure boxer, but all the pub going to guys like Adrian Broner with the flash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that, you know, but I guess that's, from a marketing standpoint, people want to see the flash as opposed to the boring basics of the game, and that's what, in my estimation, is hurting the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, we don't have American heavyweight.
Oh.
You got to get American heavyweight. Somebody come from somewhere and help us, you know, we got to get an American heavyweight that we can root for.
Right.
Right.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and, you know, it brought up the art form. I used to love, one of my favorite fighters was Golden Boy. I used to love watching him because he was more of a strategic fighter and more pinpoint accuracy, even though he was quick, he was punching hard. It was an art form to watch mm-hmm. him box. I loved his fights. I'm sorry he retired. I would have loved to have seen him live.
Yeah, he was, you know, and plus, you know, his caliber of competition was always at the highest level. So nothing but respect for Golden Boy for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And then you had, and now he's a great fighter, but, you know, somebody like Mike Tyson, he was just a brawler. There wasn't the technique.
Well, Tyson, you know, he had a good teacher, Customato. You know, he altered his teaching method to the type of fighter he had. He done a hell of a job with Mike Tyson. And I would venture to say if Customato would have stayed around, Tyson would probably go down as one of the greatest of all the heavyweights.
Mm.
You know, because the style that Cus had him was perfect for Mike Tyson. Nobody else but for Mike Tyson, that style was perfect.
Mm.
Right. I totally agree.
Mike Tyson, to me, he had such a explosive rain. You know, his rain was so dynamic, even though, you know, statistically he probably doesn't measure up with everybody, but impact-wise, I think he's the top, one of the top three heavyweights of all time, top three heavyweight champions of all time.
I totally agree. Now, when you went into the ring, because I've seen this done with one of my instructors in the kickboxing realm, did they ever mess with your stats every now and then, you know, raised up a little bit? Did they ever do that with you?
No, that didn't happen at all. That didn't happen at all.
Okay, because I know when one of my instructors stepped in the ring, they announced his record, and it was like twice as many fights as he really had, and his record was just completely skewed by like not one
Whoa.
Or two fights, it was like 20 fights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, is that like just an announcer mistake, or did they get cards mixed up? I don't. How does that happen?
No, it was because I asked him afterwards, and that was how it was done, I guess, back then. They just
wow.
did it. It was strange. Then he ended up. I remember him throwing a spinning hook kick, fell right on his ass.
I've been there. Huh, that's interesting that, you know, that sometimes the stats would like get announced like weirdly or whatever. I don't know if that ever happened. That's interesting. That's wild. I mean, it's just, I'm just kind of trying to figure out how that happened. But
well, anything can happen in boxing.
Yeah, that's true.
Anything can happen. This is one of the most the weirdest sports of all. That, you know, like I tell everybody, either you're gonna love boxing or you're gonna hate boxing. Because it's one of those sports.
Mhm. Yeah. Now, when you were boxing, was were promoters back then a little bit were they different than they are today? Just out of curiosity.
You know, I was promoted. I fought for Top Rank. You know, I fought for guys over in France, the Carey brothers. So I fought for different promoters. But you're going to have different levels of promoters. Some of them are going to be good. Some of them are going to be bad. I had a matchmaker named Johnny Boz, rest in peace. I loved him forever, who really took care of me, and he took care of dealing with all the promotional aspects of my career.
Awesome. Because I was just wondering, because, all of the major, you know, quote unquote fighting sports out there, or at least, you know, through MMA and stuff like that, you know, have promoters that are sometimes over the top, just over the top. And oh God, what was the name of that one promoter that was like, oh gosh, the name's leaving me. The guy with the wild hair, like from 20 years ago.
Don King.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a brain fart and I couldn't remember, you know, and I mean, not that he's like over the, I'm not saying that he's over the top, but like, you know, and also in like, and I don't even think it's even considered a sport, you know, pro wrestling. I don't think it's a sport, but promoters in that, you know, are meant to have like a certain type of character. So that's why I was asking, you know, do promoters, you know, carry a persona, or you know, or do they just do their job? And but it sounds like they just did their job, and they you called them matchmakers. So how does that work? I've always wondered how fights get set up. So can you tell us a little bit about matchmaking, quote unquote?
Yeah, well, you know, usually the promoters that are giving the shows, they hire a matchmaker to get the fighters to fight on their particular shows. So my matchmaker was Johnny Boz. He also promoted fights, but he would, you know, get a call from somebody and they'd say, you know, you have this guy available. And so basically what it is. It's not a big, complicated deal. The acting is, you know, if you want this fight, you either say yes or no, and you tell me about it, then we'd be ready to rumble.
Awesome.
Now, Ronnie, when you're talking matchmaking, were there any fighters put together that were completely unmatched to make the other fighter look better or to move him up to maybe go for the title?
Oh,
well, that is definitely a occurrence in boxing. Everybody knows that you know, they, matter of fact, I've known people that their business was to supply losers.
Wow.
The promoter would call them because they knew they had a bunch of guys that they can bring to a particular show, and the guys that he wanted to win would win.
Wow.
You know, so those were fixed fights, you know, say, okay, if you just last 7 rounds or whatever, you know, you'll get paid or whatever. So those type things are part of boxing. They always have been, especially on the smaller level shows. Probably not on the main events on Showtime and HBO. It's probably not happening there. But these local shows in Illinois, Ohio, and all those little cities around there, those happen all the time. They have the guy who's the main event who sells a bunch of tickets, so they'll bring in somebody where he can look good, he can win, and then they just repeat the process over and over again.
Wow.
But now that's an acceptable, well, it's been going on for so long, that's an acceptable practice throughout the boxing, right? It's not like fixing a fight or anything like that. They just bring somebody in to make I forget my wording, but they bring him in just to make somebody look good. And there are people who, from what you just said, there are people who specialize in bringing in losers for the top card holders.
There's no question about it. There are several of those type of guys out there. Those type of matchmakers out there that all they do is have a group of guys that they can send out to lose.
Now, did you ever go through that?
Excuse me, I hear you on the last one.
Bob?
Hello?
Bob, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Like, we lost the tail end of what your question was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my Bluetooth went out. But were you ever set up on those kind of fights, Ronnie, where you were almost guaranteed to win?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting that, you know, that happens. I keep using the word interesting. That's not the word I'm looking for, but, you know, kind of makes you wonder, you know, why, you know, fights end up like that. Because, you know, I think it happens in MMA. Don't know why, but I think it happens.
Let me clarify that it never happened in any of my major bouts. This was you're waiting around where the WBC says you have to fight somebody in order to maintain your ranking. You say you haven't fought in 3 months and you're going to drop down in the rankings. They have a show somewhere. You go get the win. Your opponent knows he's not there to win. He's just there to give you some work so you can get that, where you can tell them, okay, I'm still fighting, so you can maintain that number one ranking. So things like that happen all the time in boxing. I mean, it's not the best practice, but, you know, it's been around forever, and it's not going nowhere.
Now, Ronnie, did you fight with multiple organizations, or were you dedicated to fight under one realm of organizational boxing?
I'll fall wherever. I'll fall for the WBA, the WBC, and the WBO. So I'll fall for all of them. It was never one that I had. You know, the thing you got to realize about my career, I never had a major promoter. You know, I never was signed up with Top Rank or the Divas or, you know, because the Divas were really strong when I was coming up. You know, Divas. So I never was with the major promoter. So I had to pretty much go out of country and fight a lot of times. I think I fought at least 8 or 9 of my professional fights overseas.
Oh, what countries did you fight in other than the U.S.?
I fought in France. My title fight was in Korea against Inchul Beck. I fought the Italian for the title, Mauro Galvano, over in Sicily. I fought Chris Eubanks over in Portugal. And plus, I went to about 10 countries from the amateurs. So have a lot of traveling experience. Traveling and fight. Have bag, will travel.
Oh, awesome.
That is.
Very cool. Now, Ronnie, children are a huge part of the martial arts, whether it's boxing, kickboxing, karate, kung fu. If a child approached you and says, you know, I would really like to try to learn how to box, what would your biggest advice be to them?
My biggest advice to anybody who says it's not going to be easy if you really will, come try it for a week and then tell me how you feel. You know, because a lot of things can change in a week as far as, you know, a lot of people come in here geeked up to really want to do it. But once they see that the effort that it has to be given to try to excel at this particular art, a lot of people drop out.
Mm-hmm.
So my first thing was to tell them, you know, we'll see, you know.
Now, we had this last week or the week before on the show. When a movie comes out, let's say I Spy came out with Eddie Murphy, and he was doubled by Peter Cunningham. When a movie comes out with boxing in it, do you find that you have an influx of clients that want to try it out?
Well, to be quite honest, a few of my clients are actually in the industry, so not really. I guess the fact that I'm in L.A. probably has something to do with that, but no.
Because, you know, Rusty and I were talking, when a martial arts movie comes out, she has an influx of students all of a sudden.
I imagine. Because I remember when Bruce Lee used to come out, when I was a kid, everybody wanted to do karate.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles got big, oh my goodness, I went from like, you know, 30 to 50 kids like in a week. I was like, now what do I do? And of course, you know, they all, when they realized it was work, they would quit, you know.
Right.
But
right.
But, oh, kids.
Yeah. The most important thing that you just said, you know, when the kids show interest, we at the boxing district here, we're trying to keep the kids in here so they can get the love of the sport of boxing. That's the most important thing, just to love the sport. It's not a violent sport. It's a very beautiful sport. Boxing taught right, it establishes discipline, drive, and determination. That's what we try. That's our motto here at the Boxing District. You're not trying to do nothing but be better than who you were. You know, just try to improve every day. You don't have to try to compete with nobody. You're in competition with no one but yourself here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're trying to get everybody get that love of sport, love of the sport of boxing, as well as the drive to make them do a little better every day.
Wow.
Awesome.
Well, we have one question on our chat board. We have a regular listener that listens every week, and she asks, have you ever been asked questions like, quote unquote, who would win a fight between a buff and a wrestler? And if so, how would he have responded? So have you had anyone actually come up to you and say something like that? Well, you know, how would you fight against a wrestler or a taekwondo guy or something like that?
Well, you know, those questions do get asked. And listen, I tell them truthfully, if I had to fight an MMA guy and where he could kick and stuff, he would probably beat me. But if we came into my arena, which is strictly boxing, I feel like I would win. So, so that's always my standard answer. You know, depends on whose arena we're dealing with. If the MMA guy came in here, I think I could beat him in a boxing ring. If I had to go to his gym where he could take me down and kick me and all that stuff, he's the winner.
Very cool.
Very cool. Yeah,
well,
I
try to be realistic about when I discuss it with those type of people. That, you know, realistically, I don't know how to wrestle. I don't know how to kick. So he's going to beat me.
it just seems like there's so many people out there that, that, you know, that feel the need to ask people questions like that. You know, I mean, Bob gets it all the time. I get it all the time, you know, and you know, our answers are pretty much the same as yours. It's kind of like, well, what are we doing? You know,
right.
Are we fighting Tai Chi or fighting, well, what are we doing? You know, it depends. And I still to this day don't understand why they ask stuff like that. I don't know if it's because they're looking for, know that justification that there are, you know, that they think there is better or what. I don't know, but you know, unfortunately, I think that a lot of those kind of people that ask dumb questions like that just need to study and practice harder. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to appreciate both art forms. You know, they're different, but they're both unique. So, you know, you can't try to compare apples and oranges. So I don't do that. You know, like I tell everybody, I don't watch MMA, but that doesn't mean that I'm thinking that boxing is any better. Just my
right
expertise
on.
In boxing, and that's what I try to stick to.
Very cool. Now, Bob, I'm sorry if I'm kind of jumping through the conversation and stuff like that, but Bob, did you already ask about children and wanting to learn how to box?
Yeah, that was my last question.
Oh, okay. Because we got off subject and I kind of got lost as to where we were. I was like, where are we? So we're getting on only like maybe about 10 to 5 minutes until the end of our broadcast, Ron. So if our listeners would like to get a hold of you and train with you or get some tips from you, how would they go about contacting you?
We are at the Boxing District, and that's at theboxingdistrict.com. We're at 1190 South La Brea, Los Angeles, 90019. And the number is the 323-936-BOX,
2699. Right on. Right on. Did all of my L.A. friends get that? If you haven't checked them out, go check it out. Check Jim. And next time I'm in Burbank, Ron, I'd love to see about coming by and meeting you and thanking you in person for being on our show today.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It was a bunch of fun, and hopefully you will make it down and have a little good boxing session with me.
That'd be awesome.
Box worth of, that would be great. Maybe you can teach me some because I can't box worth beans.
Well, that's what I am. I am a teacher at the boxing.
That's right.
So, yeah.
I would look forward to being taught by you. That'd be great. That's awesome. So, Bob, do you have any last-minute questions before we call it a day?
No, this was a great interview, a lot of good insights. I think that Ronnie has an insight and an understanding that most people do not have.
Yes. And it's very informative and great information that I hope our listeners can take to heart when it comes to the art of boxing. So thank you so much, Ronnie, for joining us. And have a wonderful rest of the weekend.
Well, thank you, and I enjoyed it all, and God bless.
Thank you. Have a great
Bye-bye.
Day now. Bye-bye. And thank you, listeners, for supporting us and listening to the show. And, of course, thank you, Bob, for being a wonderful co-host. You always rock. Bob, where'd Bob go?
I'm right here. It was a wonderful show. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Very cool. So stay tuned next. Keep an eye out on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page for next week. Wait, not next week. For next week's retro episode. We'll be posting a retro episode sometime this week. And you guys something to listen to while Bob's doing his thing with moving. And I'll be in Florida. So we'll catch everyone in about 2 weeks live. Talk to you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.